So a few years ago, I got invited to go to Bob Russell, a leadership thing that he puts on it. He invites like maybe, you know, 8 to 10 pastors together around this table, and he brings in some really amazing leaders from around the country. Hi, buddy. How are you doing? And he brings in some really incredible leaders from around the country, and it's incredible. You just sit at this table as a pastor, and you just soak up all the leadership lessons they have to teach you. And so it was one of those moments for me where, like, everything that maybe you've had one of these, everything that I thought I knew, just like the lid got taken off, and I went from seeing ministry and church being done here to like what it could really be. It was an incredible experience. Maybe you've had experiences like that where you've gotten a chance to just see like what the next level could look like. Maybe when you were young, you hung out with an older couple who were parents, and they parented in a way that like blew your mind. You'd never seen, like, you knew your parents and they were just harsh and they yelled at you a lot, but these people just genuinely loved their kids, and they led in a way that changed the way that you thought about parenting, and it took the lid off for you, right? Some of you have worked in environments where you originally started out in a place where everything was tough, and you just, like, everybody was at each other's throats all the time, and you changed occupations, you went to another place, and when you went to that new work environment, you all of a sudden saw an entirely new way of doing work in your job, and the lid was lifted for you, right? You ever been in that place where you've had the lid lifted for you? This morning, I want to try, hopefully, to lift your lid on a specific subject. So I hope that you guys will dial in with me, especially if you're online, that you'll give us some thumbs up, some hearts, that kind of stuff. But that you guys will dial in with us, and that you will really pay attention and really, really listen to some of the questions I'm going to pose to you this morning, and let those questions start to maybe help lift your lid. Because just like when I'm at that mentoring thing with Bob Russell, my lid was lifted. I think there's a way for some of our lids to be lifted today. So I wanted to start out with a question for you guys, all right? This is my question, and it's a real simple one. I want you to take a few moments and think about it. I want to know, what kind of person do you want to be known as? What kind of person do you want to be known as? Now, to help kind of put this squarely in focus, there is going to be a day, maybe a year from now, maybe 50 years from now, at the most probably 75 years from now for some of you, where you are no longer going to exist. You're going to go like this. There's going to be this day, I promise you, there's going to be this day where you do this. And that's it. Like, you're done. There's nothing else that comes after that. It's just a, and you're done. It's a weird thing about being a pastor is I have been in rooms with people who have done that over and over again, and it is a strange phenomenon to watch. But what it reminds me of every time is that someday my ticket and my number is going to be up, and I'm going to go, and that'll be it. And I wanted to ask you the question. Before it's too late, before that day arrives for you, because I'm assuming since you're here, you're still doing okay. I wanted to ask you, what kind of person do you want to be known as? Someday, somebody's going to sit down, and they're going to write the little epitaph to go on your headstone, and you know what they're going to have to do? They're going to have to calculate whether they want to put all the words on there because it costs them per letter. You know that? And they're going to be like, I don't know, we could say he was a nice guy or just that he was a guy, right? They're going to have to make a decision about what to put on your headstone, and you need to decide right now what kind of person you want to be known as, because they're making their decision right now. It doesn't come after the fact, it comes right now. So I have kind of a follow-up question to this. The follow-up question is this: do you want to be known as a generous person? Do you want to be, this whole series is called Being Rich, and as you guys know, I talked about this last week if you were here. If you weren't, I'll fill you in. The idea is not how do you amass as much worldly wealth as you possibly can. The idea is, how do we start to learn to value the things that God values? How do we become rich in God's eyes? And so we're exploring biblically, how do we do that? And what I think the answer is, as I've explored this topic, is I think it's to be a generous person. So let that sink in. Do you want to be a generous person? Do you want to be known as someone who made a difference? Do you want someday for somebody to sit down? I remember when my grandpa Wagner passed away. We were at his funeral, and there was this guy who came up to my dad, and he said, you probably don't know this, but my grandfather owned a dry cleaning shop. And he said, you probably don't know this, but every year, your dad, when I was little, would bring coats in the winter over to my family. We didn't have the money to buy them. And your dad would bring coats over to our family, and he would provide coats, winter coats for us. He said your dad would oftentimes like stop by with presents and just unload presents for our family. I didn't even know who these people were, but my grandpa he was the kind of guy who lived this generous life. He made a difference. And I want to know from you. I want you to think about it for a moment. That's why I'm spending a little bit of time on this in my sermon. This is really just three questions. It should go like that in a sermon, but I'm taking a moment to let you think about, really evaluate. Do you want to be known as a generous person? Because here's what I think happens to most of us, is we get caught working in life and not working on life. Does that make sense? So you're working in it, you're every day, you're getting up and you're making sure the kids are fed, and then you're getting to work on time if you can, and you gotta make sure they get to school and you pick them up from school, and you're working all day, and then you get home and you got bills and you got dishes to do, and there's laundry and there's this whole list of things to do, and you're just working in life and you're just going at it and you're going at it and you're going at it, and you never take the time to slow down and ask yourself the question, are the things that I'm investing in the right things? Am I actually investing in the right things, or am I just doing what's in front of me because it's coming so fast? It's what I have to do. And what I'm asking of you, I'm giving you this precious privilege right now in this moment to slow down from all of that chaos and all the things that are grabbing your attention, and to just say for a moment, is that the right thing for me to be giving my attention and time to? I want you this morning to work on it. So here's the deal. I asked you if you want to be known as the kind of person who works on it, who makes a difference. And I was thinking about, I think most people, if we sat down and we had some coffee and we were just talking about this subject, I think most of you would probably say, you know what, Kent, I do want to be generous. I do want to make a difference. I want my life to count for something more than just having put a bunch of money in my bank account. Maybe I raised a nice family, but didn't really make much of a difference in the world. My guess is most of you would say, yeah, I want that. But Ken, I have incredible amounts of credit card debt. When I was young, I just spent on credit cards like crazy, and I'm still paying on them. Ken, I would love to be generous, but we have two car payments, and our mortgage payment is crushing us. And it's winter, and our heat bill is going to go up. Ken, I would love to be generous, but we have 6 mouths to feed in this family. Like, it's hard enough just to put some macaroni on the table. I'd love to, but. Listen, I know that most of us have some kind of big but that gets in the way, that keeps us from actually being able to be the people that we want to be, who are generous people. But I want you to hear this today, that I want you to hear this. You may not believe me yet, but I want you to hear me on this. You have what it takes to be generous today. You have what it takes to be generous today without anything changing about your situation. Did you hear that? I want you to let that sink in for a moment. Take all of the buts that you have that you would throw at me and put them just on the back burner for a moment. I know there's a lot of them. There's a lot of things that could keep you from being generous. But I want you to hear from me that you have what it takes today to be generous, to be the kind of person you want to be. How do I know? You might be saying to yourselves, Kent, how in the world do you know? And here, if I could, if you guys would allow me, I want to jump back nearly 2,000 years ago, all right? So we're going to take a big leap into history. This is one of those, like, we'll call it just like a five-minute history lesson, all right? Here's what happened in this five-minute history lesson. It is 45 AD. Any of you ever lived through a pandemic before? Can I get an amen to that? Come on now. Come on, church. Can I get an amen? Yeah, if you're online, press the share button and share it, all right? We've all lived through a pandemic. You are living through a pandemic right this moment. You guys have something similar, at least in common, with these people who lived in 45 AD. Now, they weren't going through a pandemic, but they were going through a famine. And they understood what it was like to have their entire world ripped out from underneath them. As a matter of fact, there was kind of this trifecta of events that happened that really plagued the whole world and created this famine that began in 45 AD. The first was this. The Egyptians would plant their crops along the Nile Delta. You guys know about this, right? They would plant their crops there. But what happened was the Nile that year rose 27 feet above the normal level. And it wiped out all of the crops that would normally come from the Egyptians. Then later on, 45, I'm going to look up the name of this tribe. It was the Merusi tribe. They rebelled. They were this tribe that lived and worked, operated along the trade route along the North African Mediterranean coast. There was a trade route right there. And there was this rebellion that occurred. And during that rebellion, they basically stopped all of the trade traffic. And so all of a sudden, any of goods or produce that could be brought up through that kind of causeway is stopped. And then the final thing happens. In Judea, where the Israelites lived, this is where Jerusalem is at. And in Syria, there is this drought that occurs in the winter of 45 AD. Now, some of you have lived through droughts. Some of you have lived through, like maybe your parents were farmers or something, and you lived through some serious droughts. These people are literally hand-to-mouth kind of people. And so when there is a drought, it is devastating for them. Their crops don't come up. They are every night. You can picture, right? The wife is in bed and she's going, Emmanuel, come, not Emmanuel, that'd be God with us is his name. Let's call him Moses, all right? She's like, Moses, come to bed. And Moses is pacing back and forth. And she, what are you doing again, Moses? And he says, I'm just so worried about the crops. Nothing's coming up. It's just all dust. He can't sleep at night because in 45 AD, a famine overtook all of the known world. And it was terrible. Literally, people starving to death. Literally, moms and dads watching their young children as their skin started to cling to their bones and their bellies bloated. You know those things that you've seen on the children in Africa as they're trying to get you to give some money. People watching their children pass away. It is terrible. As a matter of fact, the Roman government, you know, there's been people saying the response to COVID and all that stuff hasn't been good. And you can argue, the idea isn't to get into an argument about that. But if you look back at this historical time period, and you look at the Emperor Claudius, who was in power at that time, he did a terrible job of responding to this famine. As a matter of fact, he did nothing for the Roman Empire until the people of Rome literally started to riot. You wonder where riots come from, right? This is an old practice where people who are being oppressed, they raise up and they basically go, we don't know what else to do, and they fight and they're rioting, they're burning things down. And finally, Claudius comes and he does something for the people, but he only does it for the people of Rome. And meanwhile, in Jerusalem, where Christians are at and where the early church is at, people are starving to death. Again, they're watching their children die. It's terrible, horrific stuff. And it is into this moment of history that you and I jump. Actually, the church is very new at this point. If you read in the book of Acts, this famine is an important part of the book of Acts. There's a guy, a Christian, who prophesied that was coming. His name was Agabus, and he prophesied and said there's going to be this famine that goes across the whole known world. And so the early church, these are early Christians, like just baby, brand new church. They send out these missionaries named Paul and Barnabas. And Paul and Barnabas, their job is to go out and collect money for the Christians in Jerusalem. Because remember where the drought was occurring? It was in Judea, right? That's where Jerusalem is at. And these people are starving to death. They have nothing. So they send them out, and Paul writes into this context. We read this from 2 Corinthians. That's the end of the five-minute history lesson. Everybody good? Everybody go, whoo, all right, we're done with history. Good. Some of you hate history, right? Some of you are like, ooh, I love it more. I will not give you more. I'm sorry. 2 Corinthians 8 is where we're going to be at, all right? 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 7. And this is what Paul says. Remember, he's writing to the Corinthian church. This is a fairly wealthy church. He says, and now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. Real quickly, the Macedonian churches are like Thessalonica, Philippi, Berea. Those, if you've ever read the Bible much, you probably know some of those names. You maybe heard them occasionally. These are those churches that Paul's writing to. And Paul says, what did he say? He said, I'm writing to you. I want you to know about the grace that God has given to these churches. Now, you guys are all smart, and you know I'm preaching a sermon on generosity, right? And so you know that what Paul's about to describe is how they made, like, the bet of all bets on some kind of real estate, right? And they hit it big, and they got this grace from God, and their real estate investment paid off, and they just have all this money to give away. Maybe what the grace was that they won the lotto. Like, man, it was like the big one where you win billions. They won it. We won the lotto. We can finally give to the church. I hear people say that all the time. When I win the lotto, I'm going to give big to the church. And I'm like, I'm holding. Can I have you sign the contract for that? Because this is what the grace was. Are you ready for this? This is incredible to me. Listen to what they got, the grace. In the midst of a very severe trial, in the midst of a very severe trial, their overflowing joy. That's good, right? They had joy. They're overflowing with it. It's like it's pouring out of them. And listen to this. This is the other thing. So there's three things that they have. They have very severe trial. That's not good. They have overflowing joy. Wonderful. That's a good one to have. And their extreme poverty. These people, the grace that Paul's talking about is some, it's like, it doesn't equate. Like, what in the world are you talking about, Paul? I wish sometimes that adults would slow down when they're reading the scriptures and actually ask these questions. Grace? Grace? They're going through severe trial. What it likely is that these people are starving to death too. These people open their cabinets and they have mac and cheese and it's just one box and they've got a week left to feed their kids. They're going, how do we do it? Severe trial. But not only is there severe trial, they're overflowing with joy. This is a quick freebie for you. It wasn't a part of my sermon, but I thought I should probably tell people this, is that your circumstances as a Christian should never affect your level of joy. Because your circumstances, they don't change who's on the throne in heaven. It doesn't matter who's president or who's not president. It doesn't matter who's in Congress or who's not in Congress. It doesn't matter. None of that matters because the king still reigns and he is still, I love that song. He reigns above it all. He is the king. He is the king. He is the king. He's the king. Their overflowing joy and then their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. I was trying to figure out how to kind of illustrate this to you guys, and Mike came into my office and said, how's it going on your sermon? I was like, man, it's good, but I'm kind of at this point, and I explained it to him. He was like, well, what about this? And I was like, you're a genius. So I want to tell you a quick story to kind of illustrate what this passage got me thinking about, thanks to Mike, all right? There's a story in the Gospels where Jesus is in the temple, and Jesus is preaching, and you can picture, right? The temple, if you need a picture of it, this isn't exact, but think of Rupp Arena, all right? And what I mean is, I don't mean that he's in Rupp Arena, like they're not going to play basketball, but it is this huge complex, and there are tons of people. It wasn't like church. People are walking every which way, and they're going in, and there's animals, there's loud noises, and Jesus is standing there, and he's preaching, and who is he preaching about? He's preaching about the religious leaders. He's preaching about the me's in the group. And he's saying things like this. He's saying, you guys, you take widows' houses and you devour it. You take all of their money and you leave them nothing. You devour the houses. You religious people, you guys, you get up and you pray long prayers. And you know why you do it? You do it so that people will see you praying. You're not praying so that God will hear you. You're praying so that people will see you pray. By the way, I told the first service, if you ever invite me to your house and ask me to pray, I will pray a really long prayer, but not so that people will hear me. It's so you'll go, we'll never ask him to pray again, all right? Because as a pastor, you get asked to pray every single place you go. I do that to my family at Thanksgiving. Like, oh, somebody stop him. They're praying these long prayers so that people will hear them. Now, what you may not know is in the temple where Jesus is at, he's actually at the place where people were bringing their offerings to God, and he's sitting there, and there are these 13 basins, and they look like trumpets. So they're kind of metal basins, and they come up. You can picture them, right? They've got the trumpet top so that people put their coins in. They would bring the temple tax. It was a special kind of coin. They would have to trade out their Roman currency for temple money, and they would bring that in, and they would drop their coins in there, and you could picture it, right? There's 13 of these so that people can come up, and Jesus is preaching right here. He's teaching right here, and the leaders who are listening to him, they're getting angry and upset, and there's a crowd building around him. I can just picture Jesus sitting there as all these rich people are coming, and they're dumping their coins in there, and they're dropping their money. You can ching, 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 all this commotion going on, and then out of nowhere, I wish sometimes that the scripture was more descriptive. They had a lot to try to communicate to us in a short period. Sometimes I wish you just knew more about a story. Because there's this older woman who comes up. She's a widow. And I can't prove it, but I picture her waiting till there's kind of a lull in the crowd. Because she walks up and her husband is gone. And I'm telling you, I'm pretty sure that either she does not have any family anymore or her family doesn't care enough to care for her. Because of what Jesus is about to say about her. She walks up
You can picture it, right? She's kind of fiddling with something. And she takes it, and in Hebrew, she prays a prayer. And she takes those coins. I wish I knew Hebrew. It'd make it really, like, man, you guys would be like, wow, that's good. I don't. She takes these coins, and she drops them, boonk, plunk, two little coins. I mean, they're worth, like, pennies, literally. She drops them. Can you imagine guys coming up with their big coin purses and dumping their coins and jing, 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 and she drops two little pennies. Jesus says this about it. He says, truly, I tell you, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. More than all the others. Jesus, didn't you see the guy with the big coin purse? Didn't you see the woman who came? She had two coin purses. Didn't you see them, Jesus? She's put in more than all. I know you guys know the story already. I know you're already ahead of me. I get it. But can you for a moment just live in that place where you don't know? She put in more? This is what he says. All these people, you imagine he's pointing to them. They're like standing in the crowd. They gave their stuff. They hear him like railing at the religious people and like, oh, this is fun. Let's see what he's got to say. And then I just picture him going, all these people, like all of you, you gave out of their wealth, but she out of her poverty put in all she had to live on. Did you hear it? Those two pennies that were worthless. Imagine somebody at Rupp Arena giving two pennies thinking it was going to help. They're doing some big improvement project. Imagine somebody giving two pennies and thinking it's worth anything. But he looked at it. Jesus, the God of the universe, God who has shoved himself into flesh, looked at this woman and her gift, and he saw it for what it was. It was a gift given completely on faith. And she gave more than anybody else because she gave everything she had. She gave it all. She gave it all. Listen. Listen again to the Macedonian churches, what Paul said about them in the midst of severe trial. In the midst of severe trial, their overflowing joy and their extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity. You can almost hear the rattling of those coins dropping down as Paul describes these people who had nothing, giving everything for other people who had nothing. It's incredible to me. Now listen, these people were not poor by American standards. There was no welfare system for them. There was no famine relief checks that were coming out that Claudius was going to put out. There was nothing like that. They had what they had. It is incredible that these people, they didn't have running water. They didn't have refrigerators. They couldn't store up food like you and I store up food. This is incredible that out of their severe trial, overflowing joy, extreme poverty, welled up in rich generosity. And Paul testifies about them in verse 3. He says this, for I testify, they gave as much as they were able. Like they looked at their life. And I know some of you, are worried because your husband or your wife is a very generous person by nature. And I'm preaching these sermons and you're like, we still need to be able to eat, right? Like don't have them give away everything because I also have to be able to put food on my table. I get that. But these people, they gave as much as they were able. And then they looked at it and even beyond their ability. So they did take another step past that. There was this faith step that they did. So here's what I'm able to do. And I don't know if it was a prayer. I don't know if they thought about the time when they didn't know how they were going to feed their child. I don't know what caused them to do it. But there's something that did cause them to step past their own ability into a place where they really had to trust God. Listen, and Paul says it was entirely on their own. He didn't force them to do it. He didn't preach some big sermon. That's why I'm bringing these people up to you. Remember I said I wanted to lift the lid a little bit? I wanted to raise your vision a little bit? I wanted to point you to somebody who challenges me? These people challenge me entirely on their own. They urgently pleaded with us. They pleaded with us for what? The privilege of sharing. They pleaded for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. They wanted to be a part of the privilege. It was a privilege to them. It was a gift to them to be able to give away to other people who were suffering. And they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord and then by the will of God also to us. And I need to tell you something that I have learned about generous people. Generosity, listen to me, generosity is not found in the balance of your bank account.
It is not found in the balance of your bank account. Generosity is found in the condition of your heart. It is not about the balance of your bank account. It is about the condition of your heart. Listen to me. As a pastor, you get this weird privilege. Like, I get the opportunity to see people be generous sometimes. It's weird. I had one time this couple, they found out that there was a single mom who didn't have furniture for her kids. And so they came up and they said, hey, if we gave money, would you find out from her what she needs and just buy it? Like, it's a weird thing. It's an incredible opportunity as a pastor to just get to watch how God works, how he uses you to advance his kingdom by loving other people. It's incredible. It really is. I've seen it over and over and over again. I've had people come up to me and say, hey, I feel like that guy up on the front row, like there's something going on in his life, and I don't know why, but I have this $100 bill today in my pocket, and I feel like God's telling me to give it to them. Would you just take it up to them? I don't want them to know it's from me. And I take these people this $100 bill, and they just start weeping, and they're like, how'd you know? And I'm like, I didn't know. God knew. And I just get to be it is this incredible privilege to get to watch that stuff happen. It's incredible. And I've seen it I'm not telling you stories about wealthy people. I'm telling you, some of them are wealthy. I know wealthy people who are generous beyond anything that you could imagine. Like, so generous. But I also know 90-year-old widows who are living off of Social Security and are doing that kind of stuff. Because generosity isn't a condition of your bank account. It's a condition of your heart. Listen to this. If you aren't generous when you only have 10 bucks in your pocket, guess what? You're not going to be generous when you have 10,000 in your bank account. That is the truth. If you can't be generous when there's 10 bucks in your pocket, because guess what? You guys all know this. How many of you got less bills as you made more money? No, we spend it, right? You don't get less bills, you get more bills. You get more pressures, more demands on you. So if you couldn't be, if you can't be generous with 10 bucks, how are you ever going to be generous with 10,000? Again, I'm just going to say it again because I think it's so important. Generosity is about the condition of your heart, not the condition of your bank account. And listen, I was thinking about, okay, so how do I rope all this sermon together into one thing that you guys could take home? Because that's my goal at the end of the day. So there's like one thing that you can take home. That if you're online, you can sit there, and it's kind of unfair. They get to sit there like in like PJs and stuff, right? And we have to dress up, but you can sit there and you could take this one thing this week and live it out, right? And so I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to co-opt what Paul said. Because this Paul said this. This is his challenge to the Corinthians. But since you excel in everything, Corinthians, since you excel in everything, Harmony, and this is not me trying to, like, butter you guys' biscuit or something, but you guys, is that a Southern idiom? I tried to do something Southern there. I don't know if I hit it or not, but I'm not trying to butter your biscuit, y'all, but I even used y'all that time. Isn't that good? Woohoo! I got a clap. I'm not trying to butter your biscuit, but listen to me. This church has been so incredible to our family so far. I have seen, like, $3,000 to the Amen House. That is incredible, right? Like, the generosity, the heart that lives in this place. Paul says, but since you excel in everything, I've seen it in this church. I know there's been a lot of hurt here also. So don't let me forget about that stuff. I know there's been hurt and there's been pain, but man, I've seen you guys excel in stuff already, excel in faith. I met with our elders. We went on a retreat, and I saw this incredible faith as we dreamed about the future for our church. You excel in faith. You excel in speech, the way that people talk to one another, the way that people care about each other. Even when I've heard people talk about the hurts of the past, they'll say things like, but you know what? I know that da-da-da-da-da. They, like, still care, but, like, they're excelling in all this stuff, in knowledge, and complete earnestness, and in love. We have kindled in you. And then Paul says this to them. This is his challenge. See that you also excel in this grace of giving. You excel in all this other stuff, Corinthians. You excel in all this other stuff, Harmony. But see that you also excel in this grace of giving. It is a grace because it's not about how much you can give or how good you are. It's a grace because it's you stepping out in faith to give wherever you're at whatever level you're at, to give to God. Listen to me. So this is my challenge to you this week. Some of you are like, this is the money sermon. This is the last one I'm going to hear because I'm never coming back again. No. Sorry, suckers. This is what I want to ask of you. I want to ask you that you would find a way to advance the kingdom this week by loving someone with generosity. You would find a way. We talked like our mission statement now, the new mission statement, if you haven't heard, is to advance the kingdom of God by living for God and loving people. And the idea behind that was not that it would be my mission statement or this church's mission statement, but it could be your own personal mission statement. Every single day, what are you doing in your life? What do I do? Every day when I wake up, I'm advancing God's kingdom. How do I do that? By living for God today and by loving people. I'm going to live for God today. I'm going to love people. I'm going to advance his kingdom. That's how I'm doing it. It could become your personal mission statement. And so I'm asking you, Harmony, find a way to advance the kingdom of this God by loving someone with generosity. My prayer is that God will present you with an opportunity this week and that you will take the shot. That some of you will be standing in line at Kroger and there will be a mom there and she's wrestling several little rugrats and she's putting all the stuff on and they're checking her out and you can see as the bill's ringing up, she's getting more and more antsy. You ever been behind that person? And she gets to where they total it up and she sheepishly looks. She knows there's all these people behind her and she sheepishly looks and she says, well, can you take the dog food off and maybe the spaghetti and the spaghetti sauce? And she starts going through some stuff. What if this week God put you in the position where you're behind that lady and you just said, you know what? Put that on my bill. Like, ring it up separate. I'll pay for all the items she can't afford. Just put it on. What if that was us? Oh, what if? What if this week, you found out that there was a widow who couldn't, you knew she's not going to be able to afford her heating payments, and you have enough money that you could send her an extra $100 every single month, and you could do it somehow kind of incognito, and you just said, you know what, I'm going to help you make sure that you have heat this winter. I want to make sure that you're okay. What if our church became that group of people? What if? What if you stopped looking at life as just this thing I have to do, the next thing after the next, and the next thing after the next, and the next, and you started to look for where God was moving, where he was already trying to advance his kingdom, and you joined him there. Holy smokes, what if? What if? Listen, I wanted to share real quickly a story that was the thing that, you know, I'm hoping that that Paul's letter to the Corinthians about the Macedonian churches has lifted your lid a little bit. But if I could, I want to share a personal story that lifted my lid on this whole issue of generosity. I was on a missions trip with a bunch of students to Mexico, and the trip had been terrible. Literally, somebody broke into where we were sleeping. They took all the money out of all the kids' bags. Luckily, they left their IDs so we could get out of the country when we were done, but took all of our money. It rained so hard that year. It was crazy, like rained harder than it's ever rained. And it literally broke the dike, the dam that the Rio Grande was on. And the Rio Grande flooded the entire area where we were working on building this house. Just everything that could go wrong went wrong. And so everybody's getting grumpy. All the kids are complaining, Janies. And, we're adults trying to keep everybody in line. But it's bad. We're just, at this point, trying to get through it. And the family that we were building the house for, they lived in a condition that you guys probably wouldn't even be okay going camping in. Like, they had pallets were their house walls. They'd kind of nailed them together and kind of made this makeshift house, and they'd shoved cardboard down in the pallets to create walls. And they had tarps for their roof. And that's where this mom and her husband and their several kids lived. And we were trying to build them a little two-bedroom house. I think they had maybe four kids or something like that. That we had found out earlier in the week that they used to have a minivan, a little dumpy minivan, but that the dad had several miles to the city, and he had been driving into the city to work every day, and somebody had while he was stopped at a stoplight or something, they pulled him out of the car and they carjacked him and they beat him up and they stole his van and it was gone and nobody was going to do anything about it. So he would walk miles into town every day, get on a bus to go to work, and then come back and walk miles home after working all day. It was terrible. We're all grumpy. We're tired. We didn't care anymore about that. Just being honest, like, you know how you sometimes get past the point of where you even care? You just wanted to get done.
we needed to ask the mom some questions. So we're trying to find her. We couldn't find her anywhere. We couldn't find the kids. Nobody in the family was there. We knew the dad was at work. And so I just, you know, we just made a decision. We went on because, you know, again, we were grumpy and wanted to get it done. And I'm working, and I will never forget this moment. I'm working, doing something, and I look up, and there's this woman with her children, and she's carrying kind of like grocery bags. I mean, it's way off. It's like something out of a Western, like desert forever. And she's carrying these two bags and these children following her. And I watched this happen. She walks up with the bags. She sets them down. She lets go, and she walks back about 10 paces. She grabs some more bags. She walks them in front of the other two bags about 10 paces, sets them down, walks back. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? So I send a couple of our kids. I'm like, hey, you guys, you're fast. Run over there and help her carry those groceries or whatever it is. She doesn't need to be doing that by herself. And they run over there, and they all come back. So the whole process speeds up. The family and our kids come back. And they come, and I'm telling you, I broke. Because this woman had brought four bags of Kentucky with her. Four bags of Kentucky fried chicken. For these kids. And myself, who are all arrogant and entitled and just wanted to get out of there and be done. And this woman who literally had nothing went and spent probably her month's worth of food money on us. I'm telling you, I'm sorry, it really breaks me. Like, I can picture her in my mind. Can you picture her for miles walking, carrying those bags and sitting them down? And going back and getting them and bringing them to us so that what? So that we could have some soggy old fried chicken that's been cooked hours ago? I'm telling you, I've never felt like I was eating like a king so much as that day, because all the kids were like, we shouldn't eat it. And I was like, no. She just walked miles and spent all of her money on that to be generous towards us. You're going to eat it, and you're going to let this moment sink into your hearts for the rest of your life. And I walked out of that place that day thinking I was going to change this woman's life. And I'm telling you, she has changed my life. Because she was this woman who was in severe trial. She overflowed with joy. Overflowed with joy. But she was in severe trial and had extreme poverty. And she gave generously. It overflowed in generosity. Good night, American Christian. I'm just telling you, I am so entitled. And it is so quick to creep back in. Aren't you already starting to look for Christmas presents for people who don't need anything? Aren't you? And aren't we already trying to figure out how we're going to get more and more and more? How we can... We don't need anything more. Do you know what would really do your soul some good? What would do your soul some good this week is to pay for some mom's groceries. What would do your soul good would be to, every time you want to come at your husband, to pray for him. And you just stop yourself and go, you know what? I'm just going to pray for him. I'm going to be generous even in this moment when he doesn't deserve it. Or husband, what about you? You come home, be generous to your wife and say, honey, I know you worked just as hard, if not harder than me. I'm going to do the dishes all week long. I'm just going to do it. Or what about that widow who needs her bills? I'm telling you, generosity is not a condition of your bank account. It's a condition of your heart. Oh, church, I'm just telling you, after that lady in Mexico did what she did, I don't know if I've ever repented so hard. I'm hoping that today some of us, me included, I'm not excluding myself, will repent. We'll just turn back to God. Say, I want to do whatever it takes to advance your kingdom, to live for you, to love people. This morning, I want to invite you. We're going to have some folks come up that you can come and pray with if you want to. But it's okay to even just stay in your seat and just sit there and do business with God while everybody else stands and worships. But don't leave this moment and not ask yourself, what kind of person do I want to be known as? Don't leave this moment.